are not the first speakers. There's still injury time for coffee and tea and other things at the back there. Please help yourself when you feel you are able to reach the back there. Are you ready, sir? Thank you. So good morning, everyone. And then perhaps if you could kindly just introduce your delegation so that members remember who is responsible for what. They can introduce themselves. Or
Thank you, Chairperson. I am going to ask them to introduce themselves. Let me just say that thank you for this opportunity, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of the Parliamentary Committee. We're here to present our annual report, and we will be very much led by the Acting CEO to take us through all areas of the report. Can I just ask those who are on the board, the CIDB, and the full-time executives just to introduce themselves. Thank you.
Thank you.
Morning, Chairperson, and the members, and the Deputy Minister. My name is Hlengiwe Khumalo. I'm the Acting CEO of CIDB. Thank you.
Good morning, members. My name is Nazreen Pandal, and I'm a board member of the CIDB and a member of the Audit and Risk Subcommittee.
Morning, honourable members. My name is Mandisa Bakela Lindu. I'm a member of the board and also a member of the subcommittee of the board.
Good morning, members. My name is Susan Sibande. I am the acting CFO of the CIDB.
Good morning, members. My name is Kotli Modise. I'm responsible for communication in the CIDB.
Thank you very much. I'm going to ask the acting CEO to take us through the report, Chairperson. Thank you.
Honourable Chairperson, I'm here to present the outcomes of our performance and the financial position as at the end of 2015-16 in terms of our annual report. What we're going to cover in our presentation is we're going to touch a bit on our legislative mandate and look at our priorities in terms of our strategic plan, and focus on the achievements for the year that we're reporting under, as well as challenges in terms of what we could not achieve in 2015-16. And then I'll just talk briefly around our employment equity stats, vacancies, as well as disciplinary cases, governance matters, financial report, and the audit outcomes and the corrective action plan that we have. On the legislative mandate, and this basically gives a simplified description of our mandate in terms of our act as the CIDB. Ours is to give a strategic leadership to stimulate sustainable growth, reform and improvement of the construction sector, sustainable growth and participation of the emerging sector in the industry, improved performance and best practice, uniform application of policy and ethical standards, construction procurement reform, improved procurement and delivery management. And lastly is to monitor and regulate the performance of the industry, including the registration of both projects as well as contractors. So from the simplified mandate of the CIDB, we have drawn strategic goals or priorities, and we've actually summarized this into 8 in terms of our 5-year strategic plan. And these obviously align to our mandate, our legislative mandate as the CIDB. And what we focused on in terms of our priorities is to strengthen and enhance compliance with CIDB regulations, to reduce construction risk and all forms of fraud and corruption in the sector. So the first focus in terms of our priorities is to focus on issues of compliance in terms of our legislation. The second one is to build and capacitate the industry to deliver quality infrastructure. So we focus on capacitation largely of the private sector. We deal with our clients, both at national, provincial, as well as municipalities. We also prioritize on enhancing transformation of the construction industry and positioning the CIDB as a knowledge authority in the industry, and maintaining financial sustainability, providing an excellent service to the contractors and clients nationally, and optimizing organizational design that supports the effective delivery of our mandate, and lastly, strengthening and maintaining good relationship with stakeholders through effective communication. And I'll unpack all these strategic goals in terms of our achievements in the period 2015-16. So focusing firstly on the first strategic goal, which looks at issues of strengthening and enforcing regulations, so basically dealing with compliance issues of our key strategic goals. We have a client integrity management standard that requires transparency of procurement information in an effort to limit and promote anti-corruption practices, standard was approved by the board in March 2016, and this is to be incorporated in the standard for uniformity for construction procurement. Also, we issued a report on the implementation of the compliance strategy, which was finalized again in March 2016, and this report or the compliance strategy is to further improve the levels of compliance of the CIDB regulations and to effectively deal with non-compliance and transgressions of our prescripts. Our program dealing with construction register services on focusing on issues of compliance, proposed amendments that were designed to improve the register of contractors, and the amendments that were proposed in 2015-16 the introduction of substantive registration requirements for Grade 1. As the members would recall, in terms of our register for contractors, the majority of the contractors that we have is actually in Grade 1. That constitute for about 80% of our register. And so what we focused on in terms of the proposals that were made is to come up with some substantive registration requirements for Grade 1 so that we start looking at specific deliverables or documentation that people who register on Grade 1 have to submit to CIDB, as opposed to the current status quo where it's basically a free-for-all in terms of anyone can actually register. We also focused on tender value limit adjustments to increase tender limits across the grades, taking into account inflationary impact. So the tender limits that we have that actually describe what grade you get awarded, those we also looked at those so that we ensure that we take account of the inflationary impact over the years. We also proposed registration of subcontractors because we also believe that most of the contractors in our register or in the sector, they actually do construction works through subcontracting from bigger firms. So we said we need to start looking at the issues of registering subcontractors in our register so that we are aware who the subcontractors are in the sector. We also looked at the introduction of rail engineering registration class of works, the mandatory submission of triple BEE ratings, that is the certificates, when applying for registration with the CIDB, so that we start monitoring triple BEE. And we also looked at registration fee adjustments, including differentiated fees for foreign firms, because currently what it is that it's, we have standard fees across all grades, and we don't necessarily differentiate a separate fee for foreign firms, so we've started looking at that. Again, still dealing with issues of compliance under our program that deals with construction industry performance. We also submitted, in terms of the CIDB framework for professional service providers, we submitted to DPW, our mother body, for endorsement before we submit to the board, the framework for professional service providers, so that we start looking at having a register for professional service providers. And DPW has basically requested for further consultations insofar as the framework that we provided. But in summary, what the framework covers is that currently in our register, what we have is a register of projects and a register of contractors. So what we want to look at now is a register of professional service providers, because we believe that this sector is also plays a very big role in terms of the construction space. And what we proposed, which is still under further consultation, is that we proposed four classes in terms of four grades for professionals, and that is P1 to P4. And what P1 basically covers is it's basically all those professional service providers who deal with an estimated maximum in terms of capacity for professional fees, in terms of value for less than or equal to $500,000. And then in P2, which is the next level, they would then deal with anything above $500,000 to $5 million. And further to the capacity in terms of the estimated maximum for professional fees, there is a requirement that they should have available capital of $250,000, and that their best annual turnover should be $4.5 million. P3, they would deal with more than $5 million up to $13 million, and their available capital would be $500,000 and best annual turnover $6 million. And lastly, P4, which would be the highest grade, they would deal with projects above $13 million with an available capital of $1 million, and then their best annual turnover at $9 million. Further to the framework for professional service providers, and just to give clarity in terms of the different grades in terms of P1 to P4 as to what the registered number of professionals that we are looking for in each class of works would be. So basically, the designations that we would be dealing with, if you look at the column for designations, if we talk CE, we're referring to civil engineering, as well as SE will be structural engineering, EE electrical engineering, ME mechanical engineering, and ET will be electronic engineering. And then, so what we are saying is that for those designations in terms of the class of works, grade P1 and P2, if as a professional service provider you fall in between grade 1 and P1 and P2 in terms of grades, the number of registered professionals that would require you to have in terms of this proposal, in terms of the framework, would be that you should have one official who is a professional engineer or a professional technical engineer. And then if you are graded as a P3 in terms of those designations for class of works, you would require two officials in terms of those professionals. So you'd require two professional engineers and or two professional technology engineers. And if you are a P4, which is the maximum grade for professional service provider, we would require that the number of registered professionals that you have is one official that is a professional engineer, and you must then have two professional engineers or the professional technology engineers. And that's the that's basically for those class of works that are given there, and then the requirements in terms of what you should possess with the different grades as a professional service provider. And then in terms of the designation, which looks at construction project management, which is the CP, we would require that if you are graded P1 and P2, you should have one professional construction project manager in your employ. Or if you are a P3, you should have two of those professional construction project managers. And if you are a P4, you should have three of those professionals. And this is just a framework that is still being consulted with and hasn't yet gone back to the board for approval. It's still in consultation with DPW, who has further requested further consultations on the framework. So that's what we are busy with. And then still continuing with the first strategic goal and still under the program that deals with construction industry performance, if one then looks at issues of compliance monitor, because we're dealing with compliance in the first strategic goal, we also look at indicators of level of compliance and non-compliance with the CIDB iTender or register of projects by client bodies. And iTender is the system where all client departments, municipalities, provincial, national department, they register their tenders if there is a tender that they have issued, and they register the projects once a tender has been awarded and the project has started. And we basically, as the CIDB, then follow up with all clients, and this is on a sample basis, that have less than 60% in terms of compliance, to find out what the problems are, and then we assist with capacitation interventions. And we also do presentation at MINMEC on issues of compliance levels with national as well as provincial public works. And then, but overall, in terms of the compliance monitor and the compliance with the iTender and the register of projects, there is generally positive response from clients. The compliance monitor, again, if we look at tender notices specifically, we have just given a list of clients that have 95% compliance or more than 95%, and it's the departments that are listed there, which includes the National Department of Public Works. And if one then looks at the tender notices, and that is the register of projects, and the departments that are listed there are those that have 60% compliance or less than that. And then moving on to the second strategic goal, which deals with largely capacitation issues, and it's largely capacitation of the client departments. And the program within CIDB, firstly, that deals with this is the procurement and delivery management. We issued an annual report on construction procurement officers, and that's a forum that is held during the year. And that report was finalized at the end of March. And the emphasis that is given in that particular report is the fact that the forums are held in all provinces for all public sector clients. And it's basically a platform, the Construction Procurement Officers Forum, basically a platform or a networking platform where we discuss on construction procurement challenges aimed at building capacity of the clients. It is supported and attended by a range of stakeholders, including provincial treasuries as well as the Office of the AG. We have also prepared an annual report for the rollout of the IDMS, which is the Infrastructure Delivery Management System Toolkit, as at the end of March. And the report focused on the application of the Infrastructure Delivery Management System, the IDMS, at provincial level only, as the city's IDMS toolkit will only be released in this financial year that we are in. CIDB is the host of the IDMS via our website. We also provide online support and maintenance of the toolkit, and we do this in partnership with the National Treasury. Focusing on the next goal, the third goal out of the eight, that deals with transformation issues, and that report is basically monitored by the Office of the CEO, is we basically give stats that we had as at the end of March, or rather the 23rd of March to be specific, and we report on these against the targets that we had set up for ourselves at the beginning of the year. So basically in grade 9, what we are saying is, at the end of March, and when we focus on black ownership, what we focus on is ownership in terms of the ownership of the business, and if it's showing that there's black representation that is more than 50%, we then report on that as black ownership. And in women ownership, we focus on plus 30% representation in terms of the ownership of the business. So we have said in grade 9, at the beginning of the year, our target was to have in grade 9 black ownership of 28%, and that's what we achieved at the end of the year. We had also said in grade 9 we want a target of women ownership, which represents 30% ownership and above. At 18%, we overachieved that, or rather our stats give us a report that says we at the end of March we were sitting at 25%. So that is 7% above the target that we had set at the beginning of the year. And in grades 7 and 8, we had a target of 65 for black ownership. We achieved 69. We had a target of 37% for women ownership. We achieved 40%. It was in grade 5 and 6 where in both black ownership as well as women ownership, we did not achieve what we had set up at the beginning of the year. We had said in grade 5 and 6, 83% is our target, but we ended up 1% below the target. We had also said in terms of women ownership, our target was 47%. We ended up with 5% less than the target that we had set at the beginning of the year. Then going forward to strategic goal number 4, which deals with CIDB positioning itself as a knowledge authority, the first department within the CIDB that focuses on this specific strategic goal would be the procurement delivery management, because it deals largely with capacitation issues. So we have an annual report on training and capacitation sessions that we do for public sector clients on CIDB prescripts, which we had prepared by the end of the year. And that particular report provides training and capacitation of clients on CIDB and general procurement prescripts for national, provincial, local authorities as well as SOCs. And this service is provided at no cost to all clients. It is conducted through our provincial offices, and we have provincial offices in every province in the country. And the strategy in terms of capacitation issues is twofold. One, we have a proactive and planned capacitation session schedule. And this is based on, obviously, scheduled training plan. And then we have a reactive capacitation session approach where we provide response to specific requests where clients are deemed to have transgressed in specific regulations. Again, in this strategic goal of knowledge authority, our construction industry performance department issued 3 reports and in the period 2015-16. The first report, and I will unpack what these reports covered. The first report was the SME business condition survey, which we issued in January 2016. And then there was the construction monitor, which we issued in quarter 4 of 2015 on transformation, and then another report dealing with monitoring construction around January 2016. And lastly, the construction industry indicators, which was issued in January 2016. So the first report dealing with knowledge authority matters, the SME business conditions. What this report basically highlighted, and I'm just dealing with the three reports that I was mentioning, just unpacking what each report covered. The first report that deals with SME business conditions, and it focused mainly on grades 3 and 4, CE, which is civil engineering. What is highlighted in that specific report is the fact that there is inadequate access to credit that is becoming a noticeable constraint to business. So if you look at the graph that we've provided, what we are showing there is insufficient demand for work, which is that blue line, and we are showing from quarter two of 2013 up to the first quarter of 2016, which is the end of the financial year that we are reporting on. So we're seeing that in terms of insufficient demand for work, if you look at the last quarter of 2014 up until the first quarter of 2016, you sort of see an almost straight line in terms of insufficiency in terms of demand for work. And then the red line, what it is showing there is shortage of skilled labor, which has been going up and down in terms of the graph itself from 2013 up until now. And then lastly, we show inadequate access to credit. And that is specifically, if you look at that particular graph in terms of how it is shown there, that is the one graph that is showing an upward trajectory in terms of what is happening. So that was the highlight in terms of the business conditions. And these are just some of the things that were highlighted also when the board hosted the National Stakeholder Forum in March, where we dealt primarily with issues of transformation, that there is a serious concern in terms of business conditions, and one of the elements being dealt with in business conditions that has also been a highlight in terms of all the provincial stakeholder liaison management meetings that we've held recently is the issue of access to credit by smaller contractors. And you would see when we come back later on, probably next year, when we present our strategy, that in terms of what we focused on, the board in its strategic direction for 16-17, we start focusing on the issues that were highlighted around, some of which are business conditions, because they will assist in terms of the development of contractors as we move forward. Still dealing with knowledge authority and focusing on issues of transformation, and that is, as I reported earlier, dealing with black ownership in terms of ownership of companies. If it's 50% plus, we report that under black ownership. And then, so what the graph is showing us is that we have higher levels of black-owned firms at lower grades, because you see from the lowest bar where you see grades 2 to 4, we've omitted grade 1 because grade 1 is predominantly black. So grade 2 to 4, and what we are showing there is the reddish or orangish color is specifically talking to general buildings, and the green one is talking to civil engineering. So 2 to 4, you do see that there's more than 80% in terms of black ownership, both in general buildings as well as civil engineering. Again, in 5 and 6, that is grades 5 and 6, again, black ownership is above 80%. You start seeing a decline as you go up the levels in terms of 7, 8, which is under 80%, and in 9, which is under 40% in terms of black ownership of the contracting sector, in both general buildings and civil engineering. And in grade 9, you actually see even more of that lower percentage in the civil engineering, meaning that you have less black civil engineering businesses in grade 9 than you have in general buildings. And then the next slide looks at the consulting engineers, and it gives a report as at the end of 2015. And what it shows then, and it's the stats that we sourced from CISA, which is the Civil Engineering of South Africa. We sourced this information from their membership. What we are seeing in terms of, again, black ownership is that in the small sector, there is businesses, consulting engineering businesses that are less than or earn less than 11.5 million per annum, there is less than 20% of small practices that are black owned. And if you go up to the medium sector, and that is 11.5 up to 35 million, again, there is less than 20% of medium-sized practices that are black-owned. The situation is even worse when you go up the large sector, which constitutes, or rather has more than 35 million per annum. There is less than 5% of these large practices that are black. And then in the next slide, that again deals with the construction industry indicators, is what it is showing. We have graphs that are showing performance in terms of the agents, the contractors, and the quality. What you are seeing is that there's generally a decreasing client satisfaction insofar as the performance of contractors. And how we see that is that if you look at that purplish arrow going up, it seems to be sliding to the right slightly, thus pushing that green line at the top in 2015. Because if you compare with where the green line is in 2012 and you go up the years, it's moving slightly out in terms of the position as of 2015. And what that is showing is that there is a decreasing client satisfaction in terms of what is happening in the sector. And the decrease, we are saying, is likely due to be because of the availability of work, increased competition, or even decreasing profits. And again, dealing with the knowledge authority, and this is the last focus in terms of the fourth strategic goal on knowledge authority, is that we also hosted, which we host every 2 years, the 2016 postgraduate conference, which we did here at UCT, and with their Department of Construction Economics and Management. And the theme for this year's conference, which was held around February, was emerging trends in construction organizational practices and project management knowledge areas. We had 121 abstracts that we received from 8 countries that are listed there, and 55 full papers were accepted and presented at the conference that was held over a 3-day period here in Cape Town. Dealing with the fifth strategic goal that deals with financial sustainability, and largely focusing on some planned developmental interventions, which are yet subject to board approval, because this is based on what we presented previously on the issues around the project assessment fee of 0.2% that we need to levy on client departments for their projects. The planned developmental interventions in terms of how we will use the money. And this is based on a 5-year projection calculation, is that we will collect over a 5-year period just above 500 million. And how we intend using that money is that we want to focus on issues of development. And hence we're saying the whole issue is around planned developmental interventions. And our plan is to use that money on construction management systems, which we're saying should be about 100 million, and it will benefit just over 2,000 contractors over a 5-year period. And that will constitute about 18% of the total fund. And we want to also look at, and these are just planned interventions dealing with development. We also want to look at the assessment of prior learning of contractors and focusing and earmarking about 23 million of that, which will benefit about 4,600 contractors. We also want to look at the top-up training in line with the CIDB competence standards, which will constitute about 17 million, thus benefiting about 2,125 contractors over a five-year period. And we also want to focus on issues of mentoring on CDPs, and CDPs being contractor development programs. To say that contractors who are registered within developmental programs, they need to receive mentoring so that there is that constant learning. And we're saying that will take the bulk of the funding in terms of our plans, because it looks at about 207 million over a five-year period, which will benefit about 1,300 contractors. And then we also want to look at contractor performance reports in terms of adjudication reports and sponsorship of construction mentor training, 5,100 contractors. Looking at issues of C mentors, which is the construction mentors, again 5 million. World skills, 67 million, which looks at 2,700 learners per year on average, and centers of excellence about 59 million, and we're looking at a projection of about 4 centers of excellence per year. And we're saying that would be the focus, which is the bulk of the monies, if we get to the point of raising or rather collecting this project assessment fee of 0.2%. And that will constitute the bulk of the monies in terms of the total of being 485 million over a five-year period. And only 97 million will go towards operations, because if we are able to do all these interventions, that will mean that in turn we will need to beef up our operations in terms of manpower. We'll need to employ people that will deal with and focus on issues of compliance monitoring. We'll need to beef up our structures and our resources at provincial offices, and our provincial service offerings will need to be beefed up, and that will be about 24 million. And we also need more staff that will focus on these matters that we want to introduce insofar as industry development is concerned. And in total then, that will be the 582 over a five-year period. Dealing with strategic goal number 6, which deals with service excellence, and focusing mainly on the two programs or the two departments within CIDB, firstly, the construction register services, as well as the provincial offices and contractor development. And those two departments, they deal mainly with the registration of contractors. At the provincial level, largely with grade ones, and they assist with the collection of paperwork in terms of the other grades, because from grades 2 to 9, those are done and processed at head office. So in terms of grade 1, in 15-16, we received 44,000 applications which were activated, and 41,000 of these were activated within the period of 2 working days, which was 94% achievement. We also received 7,600 inquiries. And these were administered within the 2-day turnaround time, which was 100% achievement. We further received about 573 queries, and these were related to the register of projects, and they were queries which we administered within the stipulated turnaround time of 2 days. Still dealing with the two programs, we also registered in our electronic monitoring system 13 out of the 16 CDPs, which are the contractor development programs in the public sector, that we recognize as the CIDB, because it means they align with the NCDP framework, which is the National Contractor Development Framework, those were registered in our electronic monitoring system, thus constituting for about 81% that are registered in that electronic monitoring system. And overall, in terms of the surveys that we did, there was 96% satisfaction in terms of the survey results that basically constitute for about 585 complaints out of 14,600 surveys that we did. The PCDFs, which are the Provincial Contractor Development Forums, were held in all provinces, and those were done twice per province for the year. And this is basically a forum where it's largely constituted by associations in a particular province to deal with contractor development issues and discuss matters of that nature. The next goal, which is the optimal organizational culture, and the program within the CIDB that focuses on that particular program or the particular strategic goal is the corporate services. We did training and career development, and we also implemented a policy in this regard, which came into effect at the beginning of the financial year. And this particular policy has benefited about 32 employees in CIDB who are registered in respective disciplines as listed there. And that constitutes for a total investment of just under $500,000. And the last strategic goal that deals with stakeholder engagements, which is largely run by the Office of the CEO, as I mentioned earlier, we held a transformation, or rather a national stakeholder forum that dealt with transformation issues at the end of the financial year. And in that particular forum, we basically discussed and engaged on a transformation framework that we had engaged on, and that dealt with the fact that in the framework, when dealing with transformation issues, we identified five factors that that make up the transformation framework, and that the five factors are: one, governance issues. So we're saying to deal with transformation issues, you need to deal with governance issues. And the governance issues, they focus on issues of policies, legislation, as well as regulations, and the enforcement and monitoring and evaluation of those regulations and generally the legislation and policy matters. We also said the other factor is looking at business conditions. And on the business conditions, we said in the area of construction, you deal with the procurement environment. So for you to start addressing issues of transformation, you would need to also focus on business conditions, and that is focusing on changing the procurement environment, the capacity of clients, access to work opportunities, ownership and control, as well as contractor registration matters. Thirdly, we identified the business factors as another element that informs the transformation framework. And in the business factors, you deal with issues of quality of delivery, access to finance, as well as internal governance within different enterprises. And fourthly, the factor that we also identified was the construction skills and competences, dealing with both professionals, artisans, both skilled and semi-skilled. And lastly, is for us to deal with developmental support, focusing on CDPs, which is contractor development programs, training issues, as well as access to information. Now, Chairperson, I'm then going to just highlight some of the challenges or the non-achievements that we had in the period 2015-16. And that is the first one, which is largely, was largely a target by that was assigned to our program dealing with procurement and delivery management issues, is the fact that we were meant to have to issue an assessment report that deals with the state of implementation of the prescripts for gateway reviews by end of March. We couldn't do that, and that's largely because of some of the changes that we started engaging about with the National Treasury, and those changes which were introduced through the Standard for Infrastructure Procurement and Delivery Management, which was introduced in this year. So those prescriptions for gateway reviews have therefore been published as part of that National Treasury Standard, which is otherwise referred to as the SIPDM, the Standard for Infrastructure Procurement and Delivery Management. And therefore, the implementation of this initiative that we did not necessarily complete as the CIDP will be done in conjunction with the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, so that we limit any confusion by clients in the implementation of this particular gateway review. The second one that we did not complete in terms of our annual performance plans, again by our program that deals with procurement and delivery management, was issuing an annual report on the pilot program for rollout of the construction competence standard by the end of March. Again, this is being reviewed in this year in relation to the prescripts for procurement in the National Treasury as articulated in the SIPDM, that is the new standard. Therefore, again, the rollout of this particular target will be done in conjunction with National Treasury. We have started the engagements and looking at issues of collaboration with Treasury and just trying to eliminate issues of duplication between us and the Treasury in terms of focus areas insofar as construction procurement is concerned. The third target, which I have mentioned earlier on, which I was dealing with transformation targets, specifically the underachievement in grades 5 and 6, where we had targeted to achieve 83%, but we achieved 82%. We had also targeted, or that is in terms of black ownership, we had also targeted to achieve 47% in terms of women ownership. We only achieved 42%. And then thirdly, the other underachievement as it relates to our construction industry performance was that we wanted to have issued an assessment report on the investigation of a procurement model for limited tender opportunities by end of March. We could not finish that. We had done the specs in terms of the tender around the beginning of the year, and we looked at evaluating the submissions that we got, but only one tender was received of the particular tender that we had issued, and it was not suitable, so we could not necessarily finish that at the end of the year. And then lastly, in terms of the under challenges, of the underachievements, and this relates to our program dealing with construction register services, we had targeted that we want to make sure that 93% of the registration of contractors between grades 2 to 9 were finished between the 21-day turnaround time. But however, we only managed to finish only 72% of those registrations within the turnaround time. But as I sit here today, I can confirm to the committee that all backlogs that we had have since been cleared. And we are currently also looking at the redesign of our organizational structure so that we make sure that we have an optimal structure that will allow us to deliver in terms of our deliverables and basically to improve service delivery. some of just the last challenge that we had was the whole issue of the delayed payments. We had proposed regulations on prompt payments and adjudication, which was published for comment in the Government Gazette around May 2015. These were subsequently withdrawn, and they were withdrawn simply to make sure that we work on the alignment in terms of these regulations and the Act. And this was based on the opinion that we got from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. So this was one of the challenges in terms of the targets that we had set for ourselves, which we could not achieve, because then it meant we could not necessarily deal with issues of prompt payments. Chairperson, I will now go to issues of staffing. And basically what we have there, we are showing the fact that the CIDB, as at the end of March, we ended with 196 total staff complements. Out of that 196, 169 of them are permanent, and about 27 were in fixed-term contracts. Out of the 196, the majority of what you see in that particular slide is actually the youth in terms of ages. The youth constitute about 50% of our total staff complement, followed by ages 36 to 45, which constitutes about 40%, and then the remainder, which is above 46, which is about 10%. So the majority of what you see in terms of this particular slide is half of them are actually below the ages of 35. And if one then looks at the breakdown, 39% of our total staff complement is actually males. The majority is therefore females. And you would see, if you look at the previous slide that I just shown now, is that even though the majority of the females are sitting at 61% in youth, they are also at lower levels and not necessarily at higher levels. So the moment you start going up the grades in terms of the different grades, you start seeing less and less females going up the higher grades in terms of employment. So there is basically a large complement of them that are sitting in lower grades. So they largely the admin staff of CIDB. We have 0% insofar as people with disabilities is concerned. We are looking at a strategy around, a new strategy around the current employment equity targets. And we are also looking, we're also finalizing the review of the organizational design. And we want to, through this process, we also are looking at a strategy that's going to address the whole issue of employing people with disabilities. And what we want to focus on insofar as this is concerned is to ring fence certain positions in terms of these addressing the issue. Of course, what we've been doing in the past has not yielded good results for us, in the sense that we have been issuing all our adverts and saying they are also open for people with disabilities, and we haven't necessarily been getting the specific attraction that we wanted. So we now want to focus on basically ring fencing specific positions where we actually just target those people. And if one then looks at the vacancies, we have about, say, a total of about 24 vacancies currently. And as I mentioned, so basically what we did with the redesign of our organizational structure, we only focused on some key critical positions in the year. And those that were not so critical, we said we will leave until the organizational redesign is finished, which is going to be finished in a few months from now. And but those positions, we must just understand that it's not like no one is acting in the specific positions. We do have people that are either seconded or acting in those positions so that we don't have issues around the vacancies that are there. And then the next one deals with issues of disciplinaries and misconduct cases that we dealt with in the year, which, and then what we show there is the numbers in terms of the number of cases that we dealt with and finalized, and the different sanctions that were then issued insofar as that are concerned. The next slide, Chairperson, deals with matters of governance, and just the mentioning of the fact that we had a new person appointed in the board, a new chairperson. All the board meetings and the committee meetings, they said as per the schedule that was agreed to at the beginning of the year. The members' fees for both the meetings as well as the committees of the board, they amounted to about 1.5 million, and the detail is actually given in the annual report in terms of unpacking what constitutes the 1.5 million. On the issues of the financial performance, Chairperson, this gives our audited financial performance at the end of the period, and what it is showing, just in summary, is the fact that we had budgeted a total revenue of 145 million at the beginning of the year, and what we actually ended up with is a total revenue collection of 150 million. So that reflects an over collection of 5 million because we collected 5 million more than what we had budgeted. And if you compare the actual, that is the 150 million of this year, and you compare with what we collected last year, is that we collected less than what we collected in the period 14-15, and that is largely due to the fact that we had a slightly lower grant than we did the previous year, and we also collected slightly lower registration fees than we did the previous year. What I also need to mention, Chair, is that although we're not showing the appropriation statements here, but the budget that we are reflecting here is actually an adjusted budget, because during the midterm we reviewed our budget based on the over collection of fees that we had, and we augmented that by 17 million, which is what you see there. And then on the expenditure side, obviously we would then have budgeted what we had budgeted to collect in terms of revenue. And therefore, we had budgeted an expenditure of 145 million. The actual expenditure that we ended up with was 133 million, which reflects an underspending of 11.8 million. And if you compare what we spent this year of 133 and you compare it to that of last year, it is we spent more than what we had spent last year. Because last year we had only spent 130 million compared to the 133 this year. But I also need to mention, as I was saying, that we're not necessarily showing the appropriation statement, but what we are showing in terms of the expenditure, if we're showing a variance of an underspending of 11, it's because that particular budget in terms of expenditure had also been augmented by the 17 million that was adjusted during the mid-year. So in essence, if we had not done that adjustment, we would have seen probably a spending that was almost on par in terms of the expenditure, or rather over by 6, which would have been accounted for under the reserves that we have been approved by Treasury in terms of retainment of those four other projects that we did. So if you look at our surplus for the year, after taking into account the disposals for the year, is that this year we ended the year by a surplus of 16 million compared to that of last year, which was 21 million. If we then show the budget per program of CIDB in the next slide, which is slide 42, we have those six programs within the CIDB: the construction register service, the construction industry performance, procurement and delivery management, provincial offices and contractor development, the CEO's office, as well as corporate services. In total, that would have aligned with the budget that we had at the beginning of the year, which is 145 million. But you would see, if you look at the MTF estimates, that if you look at the budget for 2015-16, the total of which was 145 million, it's more than what we are currently dealing with this year, which has reduced due to the budget cuts, which I'll take you through in the next slide. So you see that we have a total, we had a total budget of 145 million in the previous year, which then starts decreasing as from this year to 125, and then it goes up again. And the budget cuts that I'm referring to are shown in slide 43, where we received baseline reductions for 2015-16 and 2016-17. Initially, we got budget cuts of 39.4 million, which were allocated between the years 15-16 and 16-17, as shown. And then we received further budget cuts for the period 2016-17 up to 2018-19, which were a total of 45 million starting from this financial year. So in total, the effect on the budget cuts for the CIDB over a four-year period is 84 million. Going to the audit outcomes, we again received an unqualified audit opinion, basically that had one area of attention, and that was irregular expenditure of 2 million. And this was as a result of old contracts, which we were still paying on, the detail of which is actually given in the annual report. So to deal with the issues on the findings of the Auditor General, we have a dashboard that the AG has developed, and that lists the internal control matters that we must take care of during the course of the year in order to improve our audit outcomes. And we also have developed a corrective action plan, which has which monitors, records and monitors progress in addressing the findings as they are detailed in our internal management letter. And lastly, we also have the internal audit unit that follows up on the matters as raised in the AG, in the AG's management letter, and they also assist us in conducting the internal audits, and then they follow up in terms of our actions and their recommendations in terms of progress in addressing those. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Acting CEO. If there are no further contributions, I would invite members of Parliament to make their comments, raise questions. First of the block, Honourable Kwala Barnett, followed by Honourable Mrs. Adams, Honourable Fultani, and Honourable Memasier. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Listening, it's like listening to the child who's top of the class at school. I mean, compared to some of the other entities, it's a pleasure. But there are some issues I would like to query. Why did you choose to go against convention and break up your annual report in line with the eight strategic goals instead of under the five programs? I mean, it makes it quite difficult to track down information when it's scattered throughout like that. So so that's just a general question. Your construction register services program reported achieving 5 of the 6 targets. That's 83.3%. But in your annual performance plan, you reported 8 targets. So where are the missing 2? The processing of applications from grades 2 to 9 seems to me to be on something of a downward trend, down to 72%. What are you doing and what are your plans to turn that around? Program 3, that seems to be a problem, just 9 of the 13 targets. I mean, you can't have deadlines to publish in the Government Gazette not met. That can't be. Again, what are your plans to turn this around? 2 more. In your HR program, you had 6 dismissals. What did they entail? Was it anything criminal? If so, were criminal charges laid? Are they under investigation by the police? And then finally, in our 30th of August meeting, you admitted that the CIDB knew that in the construction centre last year, and I'm quoting you, 13 billion rand went back to Treasury on infrastructure budget that was not used. Now, that's 13 billion which could have been turned into jobs and infrastructure development. So in the past 2 months, what have you determined in terms of turning the situation around? I don't know how much of that falls within your mandate, but I think a goodly portion of it. It's a huge issue, and I'm wondering what you're doing to deal with it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Honourable Adams.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity, and thank you to the CEO for the presentation. Chairperson, I'd like to know why it's still an acting CEO and by when that acting will be taken away. If I can have a timeline, please. Chairperson, on the notes that they gave us, I want to question on page 5, I think it's slide 9. Strategic goal 1, slide 9, the last bullet. Registration fees, adjustments including differentiated fees for foreign firms. Now, I'd like to know, how many foreign firms do we have here? And by when do you expect that to be done? Then, Chairperson, the substantive, on that same slide, introduction of the substantive registration requirements for grade 1. Now, we know grade 1 is the lowest grade there can be. When will that be finished? Then, Chairperson, this register for service providers is quite an interesting development for me. I would like, just like the entity, to have its eye on the ball. Meaning that in this register for service providers, we should also look at the factor of transformation. Transformation across the board. Then, Chairperson, page 7, slide 13 and 14. First, slide 11. She gave us a breakdown of the CIP, the different professionals, and the construction professionals, how many there must be in grade P1 and P2, P3 and P4. Does this correspond with international best practices? What baseline do you use for establishing that? Then on slide 13 and 14, she mentioned the strengthening and enforcement of regulation CIP. I couldn't write all the acronyms down, and I looked in the booklet. I couldn't find it there, perhaps I didn't look enough. But anyway, you mentioned I only counted 7 provinces. Am I wrong? There is the Free State, then there's the Western Cape, then there's Mpumalanga and Northwest on slide 13. And on slide 40, Gauteng, Limpopo, KwaZulu-Natal. I don't find my province, Northern Cape, and the Eastern Cape there. I'd like to know what the position of those two provinces are. In Jefferson, slide 50, this IDMS toolkit, can they give us an indication of the success rate thus far? Then Jefferson, slide 17, the training of that CIDB provides. When they train, do they give accreditation as some sort of a paper that shows that the training was done? And then Chairperson, the most interesting for me was on slide 19. If the CEO can explain to me, and I'm interested in the shortage, that slide with the graphs, that red one, the shortage of skilled labor. Why is that graph from quarter, for example, quarter four of 2013 jumping up to quarter one of 2014 jumping down to quarter two of 2014. Why does it do that? And then Chair, the other one is on your occupational level. Am I correct when I say you have a total of 169 staff members that are permanent? But what I've noticed here is that there is 86 of this 169 are in the semi-skilled and discretionary decision-making. Now, to me, as someone that doesn't know how your grades work, it looks to me as it is 51% of your staff semi-skilled. And if it is the case, what are you doing to skill them? Then Jefferson, on the annual report. You know, Jefferson, when one receives this books, I'd always like to know how much is spent on this books. Because we got it only this morning. And we had a few minutes to page through them. And I'll always mention that. Because we don't do justice to that. First one is on page 106, Jefferson. CEO, through the Jefferson, your first strategic objective 3.1, you say your deviation is inadequate transformation. So, that's a big heading. Do you have plans so that this can at least change next year to some strides that were made? Then Chairperson, on the same plus 51, the General's report, you mentioned something about the internal auditing. Here you say it is outsourced. Why is it outsourced? And how do you want to go about to make that insourcing? Because that's job creation. And then Chairperson, I can't lay my finger on it, but I think in MTBBS, the Minister of Finance mentioned something about a million jobs through the establishment of internships. and is an entity of Department of Health Sciences. What is your take on that? That you want to bring about internships? How many? In what sections? Thank you, Mr. Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honorable Sutan.
Thank you, Chair. Welcome to your report, CIDD. Let me start off on a positive note and by expressing our appreciation for what we see on slide 25, those turnaround times, my memory serves me well. It's quite appreciated, and the service excellence. Also appreciate the fact that you've come out with the unqualified audit outcomes, and we welcome and understand the explanation given for that irregular expenditure. And then I come to the mother of all questions. What we're looking for at this level is return on investment. You budget 145 million. What we as Parliament want to know is, what is the economic return? What is the economic impact of suspending 145 million rands? The reason I'm asking that is that you are, by definition, an enabling institution in one way. You are facilitating these training skills, this and that and that, so that there can be transformation which results in people making money in a smart way by being effective contractors, so to speak. And that's why you've got all these grades. When you look at the end of the financial year, what sort of impact would you say you have had in economic terms in this industry as a whole? Now, this becomes important for you to understand and to assess yourself to say, are we relevant? Because if you don't do that, you would never know whether you're still relevant or not. Is there a demand for our existence as well as our services? And it's only when you make that assessment. I'll give you an example. We take agriculture. March 2015, we're informed that in agriculture, just using this chair as an example, that 95% of food produced in South Africa comes from 3% of commercial farmers, not us. Now, for all that agriculture is doing, what I keep looking for is whether, you know, where people that they spend their 6 billion rands on or something has got an effect of changing that painful statistic. That's what I'm keep on looking for. So I'm asking this question, you know, against that kind of background. Then we can look at the technical questions which are around your operations. Slide 6. How do you ensure that no one slips through your net, members of the construction industry who are in the private sector? Have you, for instance, considered the advisability of linking up electronically with municipalities, such that whenever they approve each plan, you are automatically informed, so that you put your inspectors on check to see if that building at number 20 Mandela Street has actually started, and are safety standards being observed and so on. Tell you what, I live in East London. I've just done some construction, major construction on my house. But you know what? I had to insist on a municipal inspector. And when he came there, he hardly had a notebook on his book. And one of the major construction companies, you know, in East London, Stratford, When I ask them to give me plans, they are well known, they do beautiful buildings. They said there are no engineers in this land, so you'll have to rely on us. Because they said there are no qualified engineers. Now, East London is quite a big city. Now, I'm not saying they are or they aren't, but I was not impressed with the level of inspection that I saw. A fellow hardly had transport, walked in, and the only information that was exchanged between myself and him was what I offered to him. I've just spent $500,000. Now, that does not impress me. The absolute, you know, abandonment of safety standards by the guy who was constructing my house. People would climb up, it's a double-story building. I couldn't believe, and somebody, a friend of ours who visited, said, if we were to call the Department of Labor here, this fellow would be dismissed instantly. And I kept on praying that we don't have an injury on duty. Unfortunately, we're just about finished off. So that's why I'm suggesting this, especially when it comes, you know, to big cities and, you know, and so on. Just have an electronic linkage automatically. As each plan is approved, you must get to know by law. Then it will be up to you to check that construction as to whether, you know, there is transformation. Otherwise, there could be a whole lot of illegalities taking place on so many, you know, sites in the private sector. Whilst we are busy, you know, we're pursuing the public sector construction. And that's why I've offered, you know, with these examples, living examples, not, you know, hypothetical cases. Now, the second question is, how will, slide 10, how will these figures impact on the professionals? In other words, the figures that you give us show that, one, if I understand the purpose of the slide, there should be, if I'm a given professional, I must have within my team so many professionals, one or two, according to the table, assuming that I understand you. Now, if I'm at that level and I'm tendering to render professional services, you know, on a certain construction tender, now, I better to get partners or to have qualified employees. And because I cannot sign up any other person who qualifies according to this, I understand that you said this is subject to board approval, and this is exactly why I had an appetite of raising this issue. If I cannot, as a professional, you know, get someone who wants to come under my arm and be part of my team so that we can tender, so that so far as personnel qualification is concerned, we qualify to be considered, you know, to render, you know, professional services on this construction tender. Now, how will this impact, given the fact that I'm moved on to slide 11, given the skilled academic qualifications that we see in South Africa, we all know that most of the people who have got these qualifications are white people. Now, here I am, and I battle to have partners who are prepared to come on board with me. How will that affect the whole transformational program? Because I cannot force a white guy who is qualified to be within my team, and he's got no appetite to be within my team. How will these proposed, plans impact on black professionals who might find it difficult to lend their hands on another black person? And secondly, white people are saying, sorry, we're not interested. We have also tendered. The tender was given to you. You handle it, buddy. If you have got, you're lucky enough to find black partners who are prepared to come on board with you. So I'm looking at the impact. I'm not saying it's wrong, but I'm just saying let's have, you know, let's keep our eye, you know, on that as well. Angles, you know, viewing, as it were. And slide 19, inadequate access to finance, shortage of labor, inadequate access to credit. These are all constraining factors. You've stated it yourself. Now, how do you propose intervening here? You know, are you in touch with the financing institutions, especially those that are government-linked, you know, in order to make sure that you will be talking to people who probably will have an inclination and appetite to make it possible, for these aspirant contractors to have access to finance. I know there's a myriad of things that one has got to do in order to have access to finance, but how are you tackling it? I've seen your comments on another slide, but one would love to get a hint. I know you've said that this is what you're going to be looking at, in the coming financial year. But can you give us a hint on how you intend approaching this so that together we can move forward in the process of facilitating so that we can be able to make a comment if time and our chairperson will give us that opportunity. Once you give me a feedback, then we can say, okay, we think this will indeed change issues. Lastly, Chair, slide 32. Why are you still seeking approval for prompt payments, given that there is a long-standing 30-day payment policy? What sort of promptness are you looking at here? you've even hit a snag, I'm just curious to know, because, or are you trying to improve on the 30-day, payment period, or why, Thank you for the opportunity, sir. Sorry I was wrong doing that. Honorable Fritania, thanks for your contribution and the examples that you also gave to elucidate your contribution. Honorable members here.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me also thank the presenter, HSU, for the presentation that she has made. On slide number 9, they are here talking about the registration of subcontractors. This has been a thorny issue for some time, that the subcontractors have been ripped off by these bigger ones almost every time. So can you elaborate on how you are going to assist the subcontractors so that at the end of the day they also gain something if they have been used as a subcontractor? The other issue on slide number 10 is about the amounts that we think there should be available in the capital of this grade contractors according to the different types of grade. Is it possible, or are we going to be seen as if now we are coming up with another form of gatekeeping? Have we looked at it from that angle? And what about the upper ones? Because he is only up to grade 4. What about the ones that are above grade 4? And then we go to slide number 19. It talks about some contractors having inadequate access to credit. And yet, in another slide, you are talking of them having a certain amount. Is this not contradicting to say we need them to have so much for them to get a particular type of a job, but at the same time we are saying there is this inadequacy of accessing the credit for these very same contractors? Maybe we should look at it in another way. The shortage of skilled labor. What are we doing as the entity to ensure that we change the situation so that we can, at the end of the day, have people who are skilled? In this financial year, have we skilled any other people, and how many could they be? What are we doing? What is our strategy to ensure that we graduate from this? The last one, Honorable Chair, is the issue, the issue of, on slide number 35, about employment equity. And though you did mention about the youth, but because it's not written here, I'm not very sure about it. When you talk about the employment equity, we know that we have got a very high number of youth that are unemployed. We must just focus on it always when we report. But our slide here is very silent on the youth. how many of the youth have been employed. I'm also happy that you are now saying you are going to focus on the disability to ensure that they are being also given a chance. Indeed, if you can say this position needs only a disabled person, indeed you are going to get one. So I think that strategy is very good. I appreciate it. But let's talk about the youth also to say exactly what percentage is it there for the youth. The vacancies on 36, I think that is the last one, on 36. How long have these positions been vacant? Which is the longest one? Or how many years is the longest one that has been vacant? And also, what percentage is this 24 of those of those positions that are still vacant even now, and yet they are funded? So what percentage is it? Maybe with the percentage we'll be able to check as to whether we are really not doing well or what. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Honorable Mayor Masiela, thank you very much. There's the opportunity for the presenters to engage with the comments made and questions posed. You may also engage Deputy Minister if there's anything that you would like to share with the Portfolio Committee. Thanks. Good folks, I'm told by my bosses, the ladies on my left and right, that I'm remiss in my duty. There should be a break now, for tea break, so I will take advice. 15 minutes tea break, body break. Thank you very much, good folks.